Today on a New Year's special edition of The Grave Talks, Inside the Amityville Horror. When I first started doing a podcast about ghosts, our first show of real ghost stories online in late 2014, I wanted to have a discussion with someone on the topic of the Amityville Horror. This is not an easy request to have fulfilled. Many involved with the case are not speaking about it, are very difficult to get in contact with, or are simply deceased. At that time, filmmaker Eric Walter had just released a new documentary about the Amityville Horror, where he talks one-on-one with one of the surviving children involved with the Amityville Horror about his accounts, about life, with the family that is portrayed in the movie, The Amityville Horror. It wasn't a direct family member, but it sure was an interesting interview to talk with someone who was very close to the actual case that has intrigued me since childhood. It was the first interview I'd ever done in depth on the paranormal, and still one of my favorite to this day. On this special New Year's edition of The Grave Talks, I'm going to replay for you this interview, buried deep in our archives. Thought I'd bring it back to the front because I think it's worth another listen. This is our talk with Eric Walter about the Amityville Horror. Eric, how did you get involved on this topic?
When I was about 10 years old, I became totally enamored with the book by Jansen, The Amityville Horror.
Sure.
And I guess primarily because a true story was printed on the front cover.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, it was that black cover with the devil's tail and the flies and all of this. And so I was just very obviously taken by the entire story, the allegations of a haunting. Obviously, the mass murder that had been, occurred in the house in 1974 at the hands of the oldest son. All of these things under one roof very much intrigued me. And in many ways, Amityville kind of represents, the America's, if not the world's, most famous and infamous haunted house controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So I, over the subsequent years, became very interested in almost an Amityville obsessive, I guess, to the point that I was, looking into records of the Historical Society, taking trips to Amityville. I had to take photographs and meet people who worked on the case. I actually subsequently became, friends over the phone with people like Laura DiDio, who was an investigative reporter, and actually a news assistant for Channel 5 News.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of these occurrences that happened to the Lutz family. And so, upon this, I was just very driven with the story and very passionate about it. I developed a website, kind of what I would describe as a web archive called AmityvilleFiles.com, which is kind of a treasure trove, a creative presentation of a lot of the documentation that surrounds the story, a newspaper archive and things that I've collected through friends and people I've met online over the years. And so, it was just a process of trying to create somewhere people could go and pull their own conclusions about what they believe happened in that house. And there are so many different theories about what happened in that house. It's very easy to say that what the Lutzes claimed happened was all a hoax and none of it ever happened. But I really think that the truth of the matter lies somewhere between it being fabricated and it being an out-and-out truth.
Before you made the film, where did you feel that the truth actually lay on this haunting story? I know you said somewhere in the middle, but be a little bit more specific as to where you kind of feel things had been or where they were sitting in reality before you talked with Daniel.
Well, for me, obviously, it was just a story before I met with Danny. I had always just, read. It was all of what I had read and talked to. I'd never actually spoken to any of the family members. So my gut instinct was, even before meeting Danny, that there was some truth to it. That, obviously, I don't think a family abandons all of their worldly possessions and runs from this house and flees clear across the country over nothing. Mm-hmm. While I do think that, you know, there were very many things that have been said about this house, I don't believe everything that's been said by the Lutzes, by the media, and a lot of the truth has become misconstrued about what actually they said, and that's the actual, you know, shame of this entire case, that it's been clouded and lost in so much misinformation over the years. To develop a real well-rounded opinion about it, honestly, you have to dig through all the muck that surrounds the story, and that includes the DeFeo case and the subsequent families who lived there who said nothing ever happened to them, strange, and there's nothing to the story, and you know, this is all just a big hoax. I just think that's too convenient of an answer. I believe something definitely of a genuine paranormal nature did happen to the Lutz family. However, I do think that it snowballed into something now that it never actually represented. And it's, there's been so much said about it. Mm-hmm. It's now America's most famous haunted house.
Sure.
And in, you know, in many ways, there's been many hauntings that happened to other people in many ways that are more severe and I think a little bit more, I guess, powerful in nature than the Amityville case. For some reason, I think the mass murders enhanced that idea.
How did you begin communicating with Daniel?
So through Amityville Files, I was contacted one day out of the clear blue sky by a friend of his in the Queens area who said he knew Danny and Danny was interested in talking publicly. However, he wanted to speak with somebody who knew the case and didn't want to have to educate somebody on all of the story that surrounds it.
Have any of the other children, because obviously there was other children in the house when this happened, have any of them ever come forward with any pieces of information?
Yes, Christopher Corotino, who is Dan's brother, actually has spoken publicly in various venues. Similar things that Danny actually claimed to me, and in the film, of course, that his stepfather, George Lutz, was involved in occult dabblings inside the house, and they believe triggered the haunting on the family. Now, of course, I don't want to speak for Christopher because that's not my job. It's not my job to speak for anybody but myself, of course, but this is widely known and something that I was obviously familiar with once I met Danny. You know, George passed away in 2006. You know, to be making allegations about someone who now is gone was definitely a concern to us filmmakers, just to be, you know, very careful to how to tread on that area.
Sure.
However, Danny's story is wrapped up in the memory of the stepfather and what he feels the stepfather perpetrated on the family.
The talks of George being involved in the occult, that was the first time I had heard it was in your film. I was unaware that the other brother had talked about that as well. Other than Danny talking about it in your film and the other brother having mentioned this over the years as well, did George ever make any references to him being involved in the occult in his later years? I know he was doing some interviews, but I had never heard.
Not to my knowledge,
yeah.
No. And he'd been interviewed at the time. It's actually a clip in my film about with George and Kathy are sitting on Good Morning America.
Sure.
They're asked, you know, flat out, were you interested in the believers in the occult? And they both say no.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the film, you know, juxtaposed with Danny talking about George being involved with satanic ritual and having books on.
I know there had been a lot of stories towards the end of George's life when he was doing interviews, and I don't know if you've heard this either, where the people who were scheduled to interview George, and he was granting some of those, prior to him speaking to them, strange things, events would be happening to the folks that were going to be interviewing. Now, they weren't tragic or anything like that, but just kind of unexplained, odd things, accidents around individuals prior to that. Had you ever heard of anything of that nature?
I can't say that I have. And for, I wish that I would have been able to speak with George personally.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the, you know, a good fortune, many people did, to speak with him, but I certainly would have pursued to get his point of view in this project. In many ways, I feel I wish something of a first-person documentary nature, like we did with Danny, could have been done with George, because mm-hmm. that was honestly what needed to be done.
Sure.
It would have been an entirely different film,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I haven't heard those stories. I think a lot of your, you know, the paranormal, at least from my opinion, hauntings, you know, you can be very susceptible to a haunting.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in hauntings, if you believe in evil,
mm-hmm.
then obviously it's going to be enhanced more. George, I know at the time, claimed that he was a non-practicing Methodist when they moved into the Amityville house.
Mm-hmm.
And neither George nor Kathy were overly religious.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, of course, moving out of the house, they definitely became much more involved in the church. So these allegations of George being involved in the occult and you know, satanic rituals and this type of thing seemed very... obviously, the anger towards the stepfather from Danny, mm-hmm. I felt many of his statements were colored by his anger.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously, the need to put the blame on someone, I was always wondering what that is. Of course, that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I really wanted the film to speak for itself and for Danny to have, film allowed room to breathe a little bit in that way.
Mm-hmm.
For people to make up their own mind, because my job as a documentarian is to be objective with the content.
Sure.
And I really think our film, because we're dealing with a boy who was 10 years old at the time, we're dealing with someone who the memory of the event now is mixed with media interpretations of the occurrences,
mm-hmm.
by no fault of his own, in my opinion. And I think that it's unfortunate, because what the film represents for me is kind of the fuzzy line between reality and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's unfortunate. Obviously, like I said, I would love to have talked to George Lutz,
mm-hmm.
But the story that I was able to capture and extract from somebody who was there, obviously, who'd never spoken publicly about this,
mm-hmm.
and none of the kids have to this degree. This is the first time this has happened in such a feature type of presentation. You know, it's a sad and tragic picture. Danny was a victim, and I wanted to show the utmost respect for him to come forward. And obviously, you know, we had many discussions, you know, it was the process of making the film. I kind of had to, you know, befriend Danny,
mm-hmm.
and tell him, you know, you're sure you want to open this door, because once, you know, if you're not identified as the Amityville kid now, you certainly will be once this is out, you know, now as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a very difficult picture. And there's been so much said about this case, and for someone who was an adolescent at the time to now try to move forward and rationalize something unexplainable to a public who's already mired in decades of misinformation, it's a very difficult picture. It's not the easiest of prospects.
Did anything odd occur throughout the making of this film, whether it be, you know, something slight or something major? Did you have anything strange happen to you or any of your crew?
I can't say that I did. I know that when we were shooting at Lorraine Warren's occult museum, and we had Danny and everyone, that was, I know some of the camera operators and things were a little unnerved, because I think the surroundings,
mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit of an uncomfortable shoot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would mainly attribute that to Danny's intensity,
mm-hmm.
And how he dealt with that entire situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the, you know, it was a difficult process of getting Danny to want to talk about this,
sure.
at all, honestly. I mean, he wanted to come forward to connect with me, but it wasn't like he was open and he was open for Danny, and I appreciate that from him. But I still look at the film and I'm flabbergasted that we were able to get as much as we did on camera, mm-hmm. and in the can in an editable fashion. But no, I can't say that anything of a paranormal nature occurred to me or my crew while we were shooting it, thank God.
Okay, yeah. What were your when you first got to sit down with Danny, before the cameras came in, when you actually had the tape recorder and you went in and you met with him, what were your first impressions of Danny?
Just a overly angry, just person. I mean, my first meeting with him was at a diner in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there, and his very first question he asked me was, you know, what is your religion? I brought a digital recorder with me about a collection of photographs from the March 6, 1976 investigation. And you could feel the years kind of coming off his chest.
Mm-hmm.
He was sitting across from me, kind of, you know, chain-smoking cigarettes. It was a powerful thing. By this point, we were we weren't in the diner. We were somewhere, you know, we were in his place, so it was
mm-hmm.
fine. But it was a private thing, but it was, you could definitely feel, you know, some of these photographs he had never seen before. Some mm-hmm. photographs of his bedroom, his toys on the shelf,
mm-hmm.
The furniture they left, the clothes, you know, and it was obviously an emotional thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt then that, you know, kind of my initial skepticism of this being something he was doing for attention or money or something kind of dwindled away at that point, because I realized this was almost like a cathartic sense of settling a score with himself, mm-hmm. that he needed to, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, you know, exercise the demons of his past. That was the process of what that was all about.
When you brought the photos to him, obviously one of the most infamous photos of the case is the Ghost Boy photo.
Right.
Did you ever get his opinion on that photograph in particular?
Unfortunately, not on camera. I do have it on audio cassette, and he did talk about how he believes that it's credible, that he believes that it was something. My own opinion, actually, we've done quite a bit of, friends of mine have done some research on this over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's quite a bit of debate on that picture. I mean, it does represent a fellow who was actually brought in assistant to the warrant, named Paul Bartz, who was in the house at the time. And there's a lot of speculation whether that was actually him, because if you look closely, you can see that whatever figure is peering around the corner is wearing, appears to be a plaid, you know, like a flannel shirt,
mm-hmm.
And it appears to be eyeglasses that, you know, when you look at it from just looking at the photograph, not up close, it looks like luminescent eyes.
Sure.
So what's more likely here, I don't know, but this camera was on a timer. It was a camera on the second floor,
mm-hmm.
Set up by Gene Campbell, who was hired by the Warrens to be there that night. And there was just so many different photographs being taken at the time. And so that was just one that was found by George's secretary, I think, around after the book came out initially in the late 70s.
Because it certainly is one of the most eerie, whether it's real or not, ghost photographs that have ever been published.
Laura DiDio actually told me that, you know, I won't go as far as, obviously I don't want to speak for her.
Sure.
You know, she's told me that she feels, you know, she knows there were no children in the house.
Yeah.
She doesn't know who that is or what that is, and I guess I get the sense from her that she believes that it actually was of some sort of, you know, specter in the house. If you look at photographs of one of the DeFeo children, it has a striking resemblance to them.
Really?
Which is pretty chilling as well. Yeah.
There been, all I know from the research that I've done is that that is the only photo that seemed to show anything paranormal or relatively paranormal. Is there any other photo evidence or anything of that nature that has ever come out that showed anything odd?
Nothing from the time. I know there's about 3,000 photographs of reflections on windows of
mm-hmm, sure.
people driving up and taking pictures that, you know, some of those are very, very odd, obviously, but I wouldn't say that there's certainly no proof, you know, concrete proof. Actually, I'm missing over one thing. That actually is briefly mentioned in the film, but never really, it's never really pinpointed. There's the infamous moose head photograph that was taken, again, by Gene Campbell in the house during the investigation, and it's a photo of Lorraine Warren, who at the time was holding an icon as Padre Pio, who mm-hmm. was, you know, Saint Pio was a saint at the time, and she had received this icon before going into the house and had this with her during the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that George and Lorraine and others believe there's actually a formation of Padre Pio's face, which is quite striking. It looks very much, very similar to photographs of, you know, the side of Padre Pio's face in the moose head itself.
Really?
There's different pictures, yeah, that represent, actually look like a face. But I think, again, I hate to be a pessimist, but for me, it looks very much like it could just be a formation in the actual moose's head. But it's one of those things. There definitely is no concrete proof or evidence.
Mm-hmm.
For any of it that's been captured on camera, other than those two intriguing photographs.
In the film that you made, towards the end, you asked Daniel about taking a lie detector test, and he obviously right. seems almost offended by the question. I'm sure right. it's something he's been asked many times in the past, too. Why do you think it was that he reacted the way he did?
Well, I could answer that simply. I think he took it as an assault on his credibility.
Mm-hmm.
He had sat there for 8 hours, and I had allowed him without confrontation, without me pushing any, you know, any buttons, and me asking a question about a lie detector test was not me trying to, you know, it was not I guess you'd say a gotcha question or,
sure.
or something like that. It was really a valid question. I actually prefaced the statement with, you know, in 1979, George and Kathy, your parents, took lie detector tests and passed with flying colors. And this is true. You know, they were asked questions like, did you levitate? Did you see yourself as an old hag in terms of for Kathy? And yes. And they, again, passed with flying colors. So I think it was a valid question. Your parents did this. Would you be willing to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And he took it, again, as an assault on his credibility from the standpoint of he had sat there for 8 hours, poured his heart out, essentially, to me, and in front of, you know, three other camera operators whom he didn't know at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was an intense, I mean, he's clearly visibly shaken in the film and quite disturbed by the entire topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it wasn't my intention to get to elicit such a reaction out of him. However, I do think I did include it in the film at the end because I think that it keeps the question of whether this was a fabrication or whether this was the truth right on the line, because at the end of the day, that's all we're left with. The truth is unattainable in this case. There were only five people in that house who can corroborate their story. And George and Kathy are now passed over. Of course, we have their story documented in so many different, you know, formats, venues that have been, you know, over the years. And this is the first time Danny is coming forward. Christopher's talked about it. I know his sister wishes to remain private. And, you know, I think everybody respects that and understands that. She was very, very young at the time. So I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate. So I think the state of the case today is, in many ways, Danny represents the living embodiment of everything that's been wrong with his story in a lot of ways. Because of the memories that I talked about, well, the film goes into heavily the idea that his memories are skewed by media versions of the events. And that's unfortunate. However, I do believe many of the things he talks about are genuine and that he does remember these things. But also we're talking about a child's perception on something that's been, you know, over 35 years ago now.
Sure.
And so it's a very, very difficult picture and obviously a sad and tragic portrait of someone who's been, you know, psychologically damaged by something that he essentially was indoctrinated into at a very early age.
That's
the real Amityville horror for me.
Was there anything that Daniel told you that made your opinion of the truth about the Amityville horror sway one way or the other?
I would say that the light that's been shined on the family dynamics of the story really, you know, gave me pause for thought, because in so many ways Danny's story is mixed. He's almost haunted by his stepfather, George. I mean, a lot of his claims of the supernatural are mixed or interlaced with his statements about the stepfather, which kind of, for me, it's you know, I mean, I don't want to say the same is true for Christopher because we haven't heard his entire story, but in a lot of ways, you know, making statements about George perpetrating the haunting or instigating the haunting on the family, I guess says a lot about that perception of how they view that time in their life. You know, for me, you know, their natural father was removed from the picture and replaced by someone who was an ex-Marine. And obviously, by all accounts, I was able to talk to a very domineering personality. And so without trying to make allegations towards someone I never met, which is, you know, obviously the problem here, everyone was kind of unnerved by him. That I was, even Lorraine Warren, who speaks in the film about him, was kind of put off by him. So it's, you know, it's a difficult topic to step forward into in that area, especially since it's such a contentious, it's already such a contentious controversy.
Since the film has been completed and is now out, have you been in contact at all with Danny, and have you gotten his feedback on the film?
Yeah, actually, yes. I say yes. Just a couple days ago when the film actually finally was released theatrically and on video on demand, he called me to congratulate me and thank me for helping him get his story told. And that, obviously, is probably the highest praise I could, as a filmmaker, could ever receive.
Sure.
Especially when it's such a sensitive topic about someone. You know, the film's about him, and it hasn't been an easy process because Danny put an extraordinary amount of trust in me, which I greatly respect and obviously appreciate. So, you know, yes, he's seen the film. He's happy to have gotten this off his chest. Again, I keep saying it, but I don't want to speak for him, but hopefully at some point he'll be willing to step out and talk about it publicly again. I know he told me when we started this project he was not interested in having, you know, thousands of press interviews and this type of thing, that he wanted to tell this one time and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what we're left is right now. And so he and I are on a very cordial level.
What do you personally want people to take away from this film?
I want people to remember that, you know, it's easy to call this story a hoax and that this was all, you know, some sham created by the Lutzes for money. However, I don't think someone who goes through this and you look at Danny and you look at his reaction, you don't end up that way over nothing. There was definitely something that happened to these people that was earth-shattering and completely has shaken up their lives. And the idea that someone's living in the shadow of something for the rest of their lives is something that kind of transcends Amityville. It talks about anybody trying to explain or rationalize the unexplained to the public. And I think that's kind of a topic that really hasn't really been given serious consideration before. So I really wanted to do something new with a case that really has been mistreated in the media for so many years, and I wanted to do it respectfully, but also, you know, we have to tell a story at the same time. So I think it does all of those things, and I'm hopefully will open people's eyes to the reality of these events.
Happy New Year, everyone, and thank you again for listening to an episode of The Grave Talks, and thank you for tuning in to this special New Year's edition Inside the Amityville Horror. We are back next week with brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. Until then, Happy New Year's. Here's to a great 2019. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.